Can your savings weather an economic storm? There are very few physical assets you can invest in that are proven to stand the test of time. Gold has withstood as a valued form of money for millennia, and Birch Gold lets you convert a retirement account into a tax-sheltered IRA and physical gold that doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket. Text COAST to 989898 and claim your free info kit on gold. Text COAST to 989898 and secure your savings today.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Getting a great night's sleep is fantastic, and you can get that with a Sleep Number bed. The Sleep Number bed lets you choose your ideal comfort on each side, so it's the perfect bed for couples. With optional Sleep IQ technology inside, it tracks your sleep and gives you personal insights. You see how life affects your sleep and how sleep affects your life. Sleep Number has been ranked highest in customer satisfaction with mattresses by J.D. Power for 2 years in a row. And for J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. My Sleep Number setting is 90. My Sleep IQ score last night was 92. And there's never been a better time to visit a Sleep Number store. Save 50% on a limited edition bed during the Ultimate Sleep Number event. Plus, Queen C2 mattresses are now only $599.99. You'll only find Sleep Number at any of the 500 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Find one nearest you. Call 1-800-390-9100. Tell them George Norrie sent you.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Dr. Jessica Zitter with us, MD, is an expert on the medical experience of death and dying. She specializes in critical care and medicine at Highland Hospital in Oakland, California, graduate of Stanford University and Case Western Reserve Medical School, completed her residency in internal medicine at the Brigham and Women's Hospital, part of the Harvard Medical School as well. Her book, Extreme Measures, Finding a Better Path to the End of Life. What a subject, Jessica. Something that a lot of people are scared about, aren't they?
Yes, I would say that we sort of have a collective fear and denial of death in this culture and in many cultures.
Why do people fear death so much?
You know, I almost wonder if it's evolutionary and genetic that we really just want to live forever. There are Greek myths going back, you know, many years, however many years it is, talking about this perpetual life and this desire for it. So I think it's something that's been with us for a long time.
Now, our fear of death, of course, and there is that tendency, as you believe, to ignore it. Is that very smart to do?
Well, I would definitely say not. I think that in my front row seat in the intensive care unit, I see the results of people ignoring it all the time, and it's pretty devastating. You know, people really end up not knowing what is the power of what we can do with these machines that can keep bodies alive. And many people really wouldn't want it if they knew. And I think we just assume that more technology is going to help us and it's going to be better. But in fact, that's not the case in many, you know, especially for dying patients or patients with serious illness.
What was the catalyst that pushed you into writing Extreme Measures?
You know, I've been writing for years. I've been writing since I was a kid, but I did a lot of writing in my early years of my career when I was going in, you know, when I'd gone into intensive care medicine, and I was very excited at first about the idea of really just prolonging life and saving life. And I started to see that in many cases, I was actually causing more suffering, and it was very distressing to me. So I started to write really to deal with my own moral distress. But as I went forward, and if you'll see in the book, I found a new type of medical training that I incorporated into my ICU practice, which is palliative care. And this is really a reasonably new subspecialty, which focuses very much on communication and also managing symptoms. And it's a terrific adjunct to what I do in the ICU. And I started to feel much more hopeful and see a new way of doing this that I felt was working much better for my patients. And so then this book really just came out of that experience of going from, in a way, from this sort of dark place to a much more hopeful place.
What do you think is a better way to die, Jessica? Just to drop over, keel over, and die, or to, be in a hospital room and just kind of wither away?
You know, I think it so depends on the person. And what I've learned in my many years of doing this now is, people are pretty different. And what's most important, what I would say is a good death really is one that is most in line with what a particular person's preferences and values are. So I think that's why we need to be communicating a lot more about that particular aspect of life.
As you were studying this, did you come across things where you would make recommendations to people who are about to die?
What I really try to do is not make recommendations. My ideal situation is to educate people about their particular medical condition and about the particular treatments that are in front of them that might be things that we could do, the benefits and the burdens of those treatments, and then have them decide based on what is really important to them about how they live the rest of their lives. So I don't necessarily like to make recommendations. Sometimes I do, but most of the time people come to it on their own once they've really thought about their own personal values and preferences and understood the realities of what lie before them.
What do you think about prolonged living through, like, life support?
Let's put it this way. I would say we know from data that we do it all the time. There are many, many people, and a rising number, especially now as the baby boomers are starting to, age, that more and more people are dying this way. We've got this term called chronic critical illness, which is quite a large population of people, the chronically critically ill. And these are people who really do have profound debilitation and require, at the very least, institutional support until they die, or many remain tethered to machines. And, this is, in my opinion, a public health crisis, and this is a big part of why I do my advocacy. I really feel like people need to know about this. But the other piece of data that we have is that, most people don't want that. If you look at surveys, and there's lots and lots of surveys and more coming out all the time, people want to die at home. 80% of people want to die at home, but what percentage do you think die at home?
Not that many.
20. It's a very, very
low
percentage. The other thing that's interesting is that, we know that when patients have access to more information about end-of-life issues and about the options ahead of them, they always choose, or most patients choose, a much lower level of technological intervention. And, in fact, they don't die sooner. I think that we know that people don't want to die that way, and more people are dying that way, and I just think we need to raise awareness about that.
Well, especially when they prolong it, because if that's the way you're going to stay alive, with an apparatus on you, and you cannot live without it, who wants to live that way, Jessica?
Well, and that's, I mean, it's a very important point, what you just said, with an apparatus on you. That, let me describe it a little bit more in detail, because I think it's important for people to understand what it means to have, for example, chronic critical illness. It means that many of these patients are attached to breathing machines, and by that point, it's more of a permanent connection through a tracheostomy through the neck. They usually have feeding tubes that go into their stomachs. They're usually, in a bed, lying flat. They're often have their arms tied down because dislodging tubes, which is, is a very risky and dangerous thing. So a lot of these people have their arms tied down. And, you can imagine that patients, their families, as much as they love them, can't really stand vigil for that. To stand at the bedside of somebody like this is, I think, not only extremely difficult from a physical and financial perspective, but in terms of an emotional. And so a lot of these people just end up really dying in this very isolated environment of an institution attached to machines.
The name of the book, of course, is called Extreme Measures, Finding a Better Path to the End of Life. Now, is there indeed a better path to the end of life?
I absolutely think so, and I have seen it, and, my book is filled with stories of people who've really taken their own lives into their own hands instead of going along what I call this end-of-life conveyor belt. And to me, it's extremely uplifting to see people who have said, no, I want to take control of this and do this my way instead of just going down this default path of, high-tech treatment, which is what we do. And I've seen it shift many times and really go from something that could have been a really highly medicalized death to something that's much more home-based and comfort-based and family-oriented. So to me, that's a success. But for some people, some people really feel that, even if they understand all the details of what this chronic critical illness could look like, they still feel that they would want their bodies to be kept alive. And I respect that. We do that a lot. Most of the time, we do it without people really telling us to do it. We do it by default. But certainly, if someone said to me, this is really important to me, that I be kept alive as long as possible, I'd say, okay, in this modern medical era, we will do that if you ask for it. And it's not my choice, but that is some people's choice.
Have you ever seen a case, Jessica, where they kept somebody on life support and then miraculously they recovered from whatever ailment they had and they didn't need it anymore?
It's extremely rare. I've seen it a few times in my career. It's usually in the context of a reasonably young person who's in a coma, either from an accident or a very serious infection. I've never seen it happen in somebody who, for example, has terminal cancer and who has been dying and come in, with very serious illness and then gotten sicker and sicker and gotten into the intensive care unit. I've never seen those kinds of patients turn around and all of a sudden, recover to the point that they're going back to their lives.
With this kind of end-of-life treatment, what do most doctors say about this? Would they be in support of what you've just said?
It's an interesting question, and I looked at the data on this. Doctors don't want to die this way. There's a study that was done in, I think, 2013 out of Stanford surveying a bunch of young doctors about what their preferences would be if they had a terminal illness, and 88% of them said that they would want to be made DNR, which is do not resuscitate, which means that if, they, when it comes time that their organs start to fail, let me go peacefully, don't put me back, on aggressive machines and bring my body back on machines. And yet, if you look at another study that looks at a bunch of geriatrics practice in Canada, where there were about 500 surveyed geriatrics patients in this practice, only 8% of them had ever had conversations with their doctors about this do not resuscitate. So doctors don't want to die that way, but their patients don't even have the chance to opt out.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.